Alright guys, hi everyone, welcome to the Real Happy Hour podcast. My name is Ola, thank you all so much for coming. Now I'm going to introduce everyone, the panel to the stage, and I'm going to call them one by one. The first person is going to be the director of the movie we just screened, which is Black Mail. Can Mr. Obi Emelonye please come on stage?
Thank you very much.
Please sit. The next person I'm going to call is an award-winning journalist, producer, and her name is Sholakpe Alatishe. Please come on. I think I'm going to stand so everyone else can see. I'm going to call one of the actresses in the film. Her name is Emma Fletcher. Please, Emma, come join us. And the fourth person joining us is James Sego, a friend, business consultant, content producer, and thank you all very much for joining us. I'm going to start with Obi and Emma first, because obviously they're very involved in the film. So Obi, can you please tell us the journey towards making this film, because you're the writer and producer, so take us through the journey. But before that, how are you? Just start from there.
Thank you very much for showing up on a cold Tuesday night to support what Ola is doing, which is trying to celebrate black filmmaking, to support filmmakers and film projects that have black people at their center, whether it's in front of the camera or behind the camera. So I've been doing this for a while. If I give dates, you would start to guess my age, so I would skip that bit. But in the middle of lockdown, about April 2020, I got an email, this exact same email in the film, that said, "We've been watching you for the past 90 days and we know what you've been doing." They gave my password for my email, which was The Hook, and I was spooked. I started changing passwords for everything from banks to social media. And I called my wife and said, "This is what I found." And she said, "Forget it. They're spamming." But I couldn't forget it. That night I couldn't sleep. I was worried by, what else they knew and what if it was true that they were watching all this while, and what damage they could do. And I said, I haven't done anything. I don't have any skeletons in my cupboard. That part of the experience is not mine. That's made up. So I said, what if actually somebody had something to hide and they were kind of cornered like this? How would that pan out? And I started writing the script that night. I searched online to see if stories about sexploitation or whatever they call it had happened. The only thing that I saw was one episode of Black Mirror that said, I think the title is Shut Up and Dance. And I said, okay, that's a different post-apocalyptic treatment of that subject matter. I'm going to give it a more contemporary, more everyday treatment. And I started writing the script that night. And in October of the same year, in the middle of lockdown, people like Emma were foolish enough to join me in a bubble to make the film. And that's essentially the...
Awesome. And Emma, how did this whole project come into your orbit?
Thank you for having me. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Great.
And how are you,
first of all? Good, thank you. How are you? Well, I am going to give a few dates away. Obi and Malone, yay! So, obviously, I worked with Obi on The Mirror Boy in 2010. And I said to Obi, I cannot wait to work with you again. And nagged him and nagged him. And I hope he doesn't mind me saying, but I did get offered a part in The Last Flight to Abuja.
And she turned it down because she was afraid of going to Nigeria.
I wasn't going to say that. But there was a war, wasn't there, going on. And it wasn't the right time. And so I kept nagging Obi, saying, please cast me again. And the phone call came during COVID, and Obi imparted the story that he's just shared with you. And oddly enough, I'd had a similar situation that I shared. So I also used to be a teacher, still do tuition sometimes, and a very dangerous thing to actually, you need to have PowerPoints when you're doing a lesson. And I was just carrying out research innocently for an image that I needed. Very dangerous to put in one woman and two men. A very dangerous thing to put in the internet. I just literally was looking for an innocent picture of one woman talking to two men so that I could say to the students, what do you think this image is about? And this image came up. It was a really innocent image of a woman talking to two men at a round table having coffee. That's the image I want. Fantastic. Perfect. That's going in my PowerPoint. So I clicked on this innocent image, and what came up next made the jaw drop to the floor and quickly came off of the website. And about 3 months later, I got the ominous email, very similar to the one that Obi got. And although I knew I hadn't done anything that was risque, certainly not in front of the camera, your brain goes, hold on, but my laptop could have been open, my phone, what if I'm just innocently walking around my bedroom? What ifs go into your head? And I said to Obi, when I read the first draft of the script, this is brilliant, because it is cross-cultural. This is a black film. This is a cultural film, but it's bigger than that for me, Obi, because two friends watched it the other day, and they gave me the best feedback they could give, and all they said was, we are all Chinda. And I thought, that is such great feedback, because we are. And was it so coincidental that I had the same story as you? Sadly, it wasn't coincidental. It's happening to everybody. I just popped to the bathroom after the toilet, and there were three women talking in there, and they were sharing a similar story of their own that mirrors, funny enough, this film. So it's not coincidental. It's happening to everybody, no matter what your culture, no matter what your faith, no matter what country you come from. Sadly, it is a reflection of the world that we live in. And that is the story that inspired me, that it doesn't matter who you are. You don't have to be a famous actor. You can be anybody and find yourself in this situation, whether you are innocent in your own surroundings or not. And that's what drew me to this story, because I thought, you know, there's so many independent filmmakers out there trying to make a difference. And Obi is making a difference. And when you see, I feel all emotional now, but when you see something like this, whether it's on the big silver screen or on your box at home, let's applaud people like Obi for making that difference, and let's get the message out there that we are all
children. I need money.
And money.
Thank you very much for that. Shalakpe, so we've got a back story of how we got this story and this production. So now, as a first-time viewer, maybe second-time viewer, what is your opinion of this film? Like, how did you receive this film?
I think for me, I tried not to watch it until like yesterday, because I really wanted to kind of give a first take, if that makes sense. So this is my second time watching it today. And I think what I would say is there's a lot of moving parts in it. And I think, like what they both said, really, it is something that people go through all the time. I mean, even me, myself, I've had to like change my passwords because I was told that like my email's part of a leak, and they were trying to like...
Comes with being Nigerian.
Oh gosh, yeah.
So yes, you have to change your passwords.
So yeah, I think it's something that we can all unfortunately kind of understand the concept of. So I think in that regard, it was very much personable for people who are watching it.
And James, same question.
Hello, good evening. Is it on? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. So, first time watcher as well of the film.
He's written notes.
I did. I took notes around the film. So, different take. Instead of really reflecting or focusing on the the phishing or scam email, my take is on the whole concept of spectacle. And so I'm not too sure whether it was intentional or the fact he was an actor. And obviously what do actors do for a living? They're watched. You know, they perform and people watch them. Now, at the same time, he's also watching pornography. And there are people watching people who are performing the pornography in order to be watched. But then it's almost like there's a bit of a parallel here. So obviously as an actor, his life is being torn apart by this scam, this phishing email. Same time, I don't know whether there's a parallel between whole concept of pornography and sex trafficking. So those girls are being sex trafficked. And so I'm not too sure if that was like a layer which you'd intended to bring out.
I never thought about that. That's deep. Yeah, you know, I think in deconstructing films or whether it's a book or a piece of research, there are aspects of it that you do consciously and find correlations, but there are some aspects that are organic, accidental. And I think in trying to feed the backstory for the crime element of the story, we dabbled into areas that have come to kind of organically match what we're trying to say. But it wasn't all laid on the table with a huge plan to find a correlation across the themes that we dealt with. So it's something that I'm learning. And sometimes you put out a piece of work and you start to learn it from people's perspectives. And it's a great perspective to have.
Thank you. Can I just add one more point as well? Sorry. Just one more thing. So also, not just aside from sex trafficking actor, but also the fact he went viral. Now, there seems to be some sort of human fascination with the whole concept of sex tapes. I don't know if anybody's heard of what's happened in Equatorial Guinea recently. You've heard about it. So I don't know if anybody's unaware of what's happened. There was quite a senior level government official who basically had about 400 videos of himself with multiple women, wives, sex tapes that have been released. And for some reason, the internet has grabbed it. It went so viral that even BBC picked it up. Now, I've always wondered, what's the fascination of like a sex tape? Like, why do people want to watch that? And I think the fact it went viral here, and obviously his fear was his life's going to be ruined, and at some point it was actually released as well, and everyone's reaching out to him. It's like, what's the human fascination of going viral or viral videos?
Once again, that's a very strong academic extension of our ideas. I think, like you said, as an actor, he's looking to be out there. And his friend once, in one of the lines, said, I've seen people blow on sex tapes. Yeah. So yeah. It's he might have eventually blown on that sex tape. Yeah. However, it is the time of explosion, the time of release of the sex tape is when the most dangerous aspect of it happens. Beyond that, when the dust settles, you might have something to grab on to move to the next level. And I think people are, you know, this is what people do in behind closed doors, but there's a human fascination for seeing other people do it and to look at somebody else's story. And just like our Equatorial Guinea man, he's become very famous and has given Nigerian comedians for the next few years. So it's a fascination that, you know, it's there, and the aspect of social media, which is, you know, once I finished writing the script, I took a proper plaster and put it on my laptop. It's still there up to this minute. And it's that, how would I call it? That vulnerability, that fear, trepidation to not give away anything. And because I can see how, from my research, you know, and the statement about 7 suicides in the UK in the last 4 years, that's correct statistically. So people's lives have been destroyed and people have developed content from it. It's the, some people are laughing and some people are crying situation.
One thing I really enjoyed is how diverse the story was. Like, I enjoyed how every character, we sort of told their story. You know, we had OC's story, we had Igor's story, we had the lady, I can't remember her name, her story. So I just really enjoyed, and there was another language in there. So it was not just a Nigerian film, but it was like a
Russian.
Like, it was a very diverse film, which I really enjoyed. What were shocking bits of this movie that you were not expecting? Like, Shalakpe, what?
Oh, that's a really good question. What was I not expecting? I think, let me have a think, just because I wrote down a couple of things here, actually. I guess there wasn't necessarily anything I wasn't expecting, but what I was going to ask, if that's all right, is obviously the whole idea of the Russian trope, the Russian being the bad guy. How did you come to the decision of you know, we're going to go with the Russian line, if that makes sense? Because I have to admit, as soon as I heard the voice and I heard the language, I thought, oh, where's this going to go? Like, so how did you make the decision to go with that?
I think as a Nigerian, you know what I'm going to say, as a Nigerian, we are usually the ones on that side of the fence, the ones being stereotyped, the ones being profiled. And I just wanted to turn the script a little bit to change that, you know. And statistically, Ukrainians and Russians are very well renowned in that world of, you know, cyber violence, if you call it that. So you, and also when I was at university in Nigeria, I studied Russian a little bit. So it's a language that I understand, and I think it would, and I thought it would bring a certain exotic language to the mix.
I wanted to counter that though, because what would you say to the argument that perhaps you are? So like how when we watch things sometimes and we're like, oh, the Nigerian's always the one that's doing 419 and doing all of that. Like, how did you consider that perhaps you were reinforcing a stereotype for another group of people?
I could have made the police dodgy, and that would have been, you know, saying SX police are usually corrupt and stuff like that. I think there are stereotypes. I think there are generalizations that exist. There's usually an element of truth in those generalizations. But I think as a storyteller, you start from a place of knowledge for the audience and for yourself so that they have a foundation. And then you can build a character and make them. And I made great effort to humanize the Russian criminal, because usually you would see them as black and white, and I wanted to gray him a little bit to provide a little bit of context for why he's doing what he's doing, that he's a good man to somebody, even though he's a bad man to a lot of people. So there's generalization, but you, unfortunately, as a storyteller, you have to build your hang your coat on something.
Yeah, I really like that you humanized everyone. Everyone is going through something, and it's not in every film that we get to see that part of the villain. You know, so it was interesting seeing that. Emma, experiences from filming. What were the experiences?
Well, COVID. Where do we start?
It's a shot during COVID.
Oh my gosh, we shot. We shot when we were allowed, when there was a lift in the restrictions, and Obi organized bubbles, and we obviously had different bubbles depending on who we were filming with. I'm sure she won't mind me saying, but Julia and I, we shook hands, and then as soon as you said cut, we kind of went, yeah, and we just both rushed to the bathroom and washed our hands furiously. So there was that feeling and awareness of the situation. And I'm, if I may say, I'm so proud of you, if I may say that, Obi, what you've achieved, not just with this film, but also in COVID? How did you do that? I mean, I know a lot of posts has gone into it as well, but it's incredible. I just want to say one of the amazing things actually was that that helmet being thrown at the TV screen and the TV shattering is not CGI.
Yeah, that must have been expensive.
Oh, we just decided to get rid of that TV screen. That was a real shot of a TV being shattered. Can I just add to what you were saying, though? Because I think, for me, one of the things that's so powerful about the storyline also is the fact that for most of us, I mean, I can't say that everybody feels this way, but I think for most of the human race, having a sexual intimacy with somebody is just that. It's something you do, usually behind closed doors, and it can, for many people, make and break a relationship. We've seen many politicians, many actors, many people in the public eye notoriously being taken down because of the fact that their private life has been revealed. And that's horrendous, actually. What's private should be private. And so for me, as an actor and looking in at the characters, I felt quite incensed in my character that how dare an actor be taken down for what he does privately. It could have broken his relationship. It could have broken his career. That's obviously the character speaking, but also me as Emma saying that's it's wrong to ruin someone's life because of what they do in their private life. And as Obi said, you said statistics were accurate. I bet you it's higher now. I'm sure it is in the world that we live in and with the internet the way it is.
A few of the Equatorial Guinea young ladies have committed suicide. That's what's out there.
What I mean is, even though the statistics are accurate, I'm sure, I expect every second they're changing is what I mean. And again, so it is a powerful message. And I really love that fact as well, about the fact that I kept saying that to my friends after they'd watched it. What did you think of the Russian story? Because as he says in character, that everybody basically has a boss above them. Everybody has their modus operandi. And I guess even evil people don't think they're evil. So everybody has a reason for being. And you often hear actors saying that when they have to portray somebody that is seen to be evil, they still, as I do myself, have to find a way in to that character. What makes that character tick? And you have to actually learn to love the character you're playing and find a reason for their being, a reason for what they're doing. Yeah, she didn't figure it out, did she? She sort of, you know, at the end suddenly goes, oh no, I was in the room and I missed all the what was that about? What was she doing? But a great character to play. I mean, I loved every second of it. I loved every second of working with Obi. And he had us laughing a lot on set as well. We had a laugh.
A conversation about the business side of, you know, filmmaking and the journey of actually... No, this is this is where you're really going to shine. So just the business of filmmaking and how this came about in terms of just developing this film. Because some of us here might be filmmakers, and the fact that you did this like around COVID, that must have been even harder. So just ask the question.
So the business of filmmaking is a business. A lot of creatives are not great at the business side, and it's not a criticism of us, because I'm one of them. I hate talking about money, but it's the reality. We are so consumed in our dream world that we forget the reality of the pounds and shillings. My advice to anybody who remotely wants to get involved in the industry is to do something. When I started making films, we were selling films on DVDs and stuff like that. Today, you can shoot a short and make it go viral in a matter of days. You can self-broadcast. You can do stuff that never existed before. Because it's like football. You're as good as your last game. Your calling card for the next project is what you did before. And once you have something like, you know, that you've done, then you can have conversations. Usually you should do that with your own money, your own resources, so that when you are approaching somebody else to invest, they would have seen you invest your bit. You know, your talent is there, but what else have you added to the mix? So once you have that, then it becomes easy to have a conversation with somebody about investment. So in this particular instance, once before the script was ready, I had a friend, an acquaintance at the time, because I hadn't met him. Bosun, one of the executive producers, he contacted me and said he wanted to make, you know, made some films, he wanted to make more. So I told him, look, I had this idea that is, I think is very contemporary, that we could make it into a kind of what I called wham bam thank you ma'am kind of film. Just make it for immediate consumption on Netflix. And he read the script, bought the idea, and, you know, we toyed around with the casting, OC, whether it was OC or somebody else, whether he needed to cast locally from the UK. OC had to travel from Canada, where he lives, to come to the shoot. And I don't know if I should say this, but we made the film with $100,000, everything included. And 2 years later, it was in 100 cinemas across the UK. It didn't make me a millionaire, but it has opened doors for more independently made black films to have access to distribution. And then came the other side. What I think is, I call it being lost in translation. I'm Nigerian, but I've lived in the UK for 31 years. And in spite of that time, in spite of what my passport says, I'm considered not British enough. To give you an example, Blackmail was pitched to Netflix UK, and they said, oh, it's a good film, but they needed more mainstream people in it for it to fly. I said, how do you get mainstream if you don't support the beginners? You know, is it a good film or not? At least you could, let's talk about the valuation here. But if it's a good film and it's UK made and it had the biggest release, theatrical release of any black film independently made in the UK, it opened festivals, it won awards, you should give it a chance. That's how you get the big names. The people in it will now become the next big names. But they weren't listening to that. Okay, we'll go to Nigeria. Netflix Niger. They watch it. They say it's one of the best films that they've seen made by a Nigerian. However, it hasn't got what they called hyper-local. So it wasn't hyper-local. So it wasn't made in Nigerian language. It didn't have a lot of recognizable Nigerian artists. Even though it was funded by a Nigerian, written by a Nigerian, produced by a Nigerian, all of those did not count. So I wasn't British enough, and I was also not Nigerian enough. So Netflix passed on it, you know, and that's the problem that we have as diasporans, because we are trying to embed here, we are trying to still have a local connection back home, and that puts us in a hybrid mode where we neither belong here nor belong there. So in the end, it was acquired by Amazon Prime and started streaming there in September this year, nearly 3 years after it was made. And in that time, I've had to keep my investors happy. I've had to protect my image and my name and my reputation, because the next thing would be on social media, this guy collected money from me, promised me that he was going to turn this around in 1 week, and we are waiting 3 years down the line. They will call EFCC, which is the Nigerian police force responsible for crime and criminal, financial crimes. They'll call them on me. So I try to manage that by using funds from other projects to draw down my exposure to them and to show goodwill, to say, look, I haven't sold the film and run away. The film is going to sell eventually. So it was as Emma would attest, a huge relief when eventually Amazon Prime took it. And that tells you that if you try and make a decent project, you believe in it and you keep pushing it, someday somebody will take it off you.
Thank you.
We've run out of time here, but we can take this conversation upstairs. So thank you all very much. This is not the end. This is just part one of two. Now we're going to go upstairs and we'll continue the conversation.